Hey, hey, local legends. Welcome to the Why We Run podcast, hosted by me, John Barnes. Today's tale from the pack comes from Sam Hammond, or better known these days as Man versus Fridge. Sam is a Royal Marine and recently broke the Guinness World Record for running a full and half marathon with a fridge on his back. This is his reason.
So my journey, or fizz, as we call it in the military, dates way back. So even when I was a lot younger, primary school, I always performed quite well when it came to fizz, whether it be tag rugby, cricket, football, you know, anything I tried my hand at, I enjoyed and just couldn't get enough of it. And that actually included running. Competed cross country at a county standard as a kid, not because I loved running so much, but because I was good at it. And then as I sort of grew older into my late teens, early 20s, it did disappear a bit. I didn't run too much, but I kept up sport as a whole. And then a nice advert on TV popped up of some guy sat in a boat sneaking around that was quite attractive. And the next day I went down to the careers office and applied to join the Royal Marines. So application went in. I didn't really know what the Royal Marines was. So onto Google, Royal Marines, and, you know, elite fighting force of the UK. And I'm like, oh, that sounds quite exciting. And as I've dug deeper and dug deeper, you read about the physical ability of Royal Marines is, you know, we maintain a very high standard, especially at entry levels. So that's when I started getting back into my running a bit. The competitive side of me meant, you know, I need to be performing at the higher sort of end of the standard. So I went from training on a bleep test and getting maybe level 10 or 11 to, by the time I joined up, sort of running level 14, 15, maybe even 16 on a bleep test, which was, again, a testament to my younger years. Through Royal Marine training, there's a lot of fizz, and having such enjoyment from doing fizz certainly helps. However, it does do its best to sap that out of you. A hell of a lot of running, a lot of sort of assault courses, and a lot of carrying weight. But as soon as you finish your training and you head to a company and start, we call it company fizz, you're basically going to do exercise sort of 3 to 5 days a week every morning. And in that is, again, a lot of running. So all my running then was purely through company fizz. And again, being sort of naturally okay at running, it wasn't too bad. You're running at around 7 minute mile pace, usually, for anything from 4 to 10 miles, and with a few hill sprints in the middle for good measure. But through that forced fizz, through that forced running, sort of is when running really got away from me and became far from a hobby. And a mixture of being forced to run and having a few different niggles that continuously pick up whilst you're in the military, to say I fell out of love with it entirely is not inaccurate. I didn't run at all, didn't want to run, would avoid actively. And that sort of set me up for the next sort of few years from, you know, 24 through to maybe 28, 29 years old. I actually bought myself a Garmin in 2019. So obviously from that point, I went back to tracking runs, or tracking all my fizz on my watch. But again, barely running, a couple of runs when I was in America, and that's about it. Just, you know, slow, steady state, a couple of miles, trying to get into it, realizing, nah, that's not for me, and putting it back down again. And that was till pretty recently, when the concept came up of training with a fridge. I've always wanted to do something reasonably good and reasonably interesting for charity. And I was speaking with a partner, absolutely randomly came up with the idea of carrying a fridge up to Snowdon. The plan was to, both me and her spend a lot of time in Snowdonia. So I wanted to give something back where I could. So I said to her, I'm going to raise some money for the mountain rescue, and I need something big and something silly, and I'm pretty good at carrying weight. So the idea of carrying the fridge up was born, and it all sounded like a really good idea. I announced it in July, and then 2 days later, a bloke called Michael Copeland, who's been in the news this week, walked up Snowdon with a fridge on his back. At this point, I'd never heard of him, didn't know it existed. I didn't even know the idea existed other than in my head. So I had to change my plan from just doing Snowdon to doing the Welsh Three Peaks. In my head, climbing up Snowdon with a fridge on my back was going to be relatively easy, having climbed Snowdon with a Bergen on my back through a military training before. However, switching it to the Welsh Three Peaks, I'm now looking at, you know, triple the distance and more than double the height. I realise it's going to be quite difficult, and I'd have to really pick up my training rather than just walking around with some weight on my back. And that's when I started running again. However, this time, rather than just running normally, a lot of the time I was running with weight on my back. So the plan for Wales was to complete the Welsh Three Peaks in under 24 hours. Not sure how difficult it was going to be. I thought fitness is going to be my friend. So I started doing local park runs. So just 5K, slung the fridge on my back, and, you know, I'm running these park runs in about 32 minutes initially. And it did kind of bring it back a little bit. And I was really, really enjoying it. And more than anything was the nice community feeling you get from a park run. And I'd say to anyone that hasn't tried a park run, that maybe does enjoy a little bit of running or wants to try a little bit of running, a park run is like the number one place to start, because you've got everything from elite athletes running in sort of 15, 16 minutes to my great grandma who does it in like almost an hour. So you're going to fit in. And there's a lot of first time runners, people that haven't run that are there. And the support I got, and the ability to start speaking about the charity, which was a Llanfairpwll Mountain Rescue, sort of started to open up there. And although I wasn't really thinking too much about running moving forward, it had sort of planted that seed where I was enjoying it again. Time carries on and it gets to September, and I climb the Welsh Three Peaks with a fridge in my back and raise a decent amount of money for the mountain rescue and really enjoyed it. But immediately after, you get that euphoric feeling of you've done something really good, a really good achievement, and then the wind gets taken from you. So you've had this big goal in mind, you've been working hard for it, you've absolutely smashed it, you're really proud of yourself, and then what? And you're just stuck wondering what to do. And it's at this point that my inbox started to get lit up by people saying, "What's next? What's next?" And I didn't know at this time until someone dropped in a link to a Guinness World Record for a marathon with a fridge. And I looked at it and I was like, I haven't ran, other than these 5Ks, I've not ran at all in the last few years. And now someone showed me this marathon, 5 hours, 49 minutes, and a few seconds to run a marathon with a fridge. And so a little bit more Google, I found out there's also a half marathon world record. So I signed up on Guinness World Record for both of these records and thought, right, I'll put my trainers on. And fully out of the blue, having not done any running really other than these 5Ks, I went out and ran a half marathon around the local roads in Helston. Got sort of about 11 miles in, was feeling okay. And sort of the last 2 miles was already, quite difficult. And my body was really hurting quite a bit. And my mindset was this was going to be easy when I stepped off. And it was about 2 hours and 20 minutes it took me to do my first ever half marathon, sort of in my own time, bearing in mind that I went in with zero training. And I looked at it and I was like, well, I've got an extra 30 minutes now to do that with a fridge. So I spoke to my partner. I was like, is this something that's doable? And I think she already knew that I needed something. And straight away, straight behind me, she's like, yeah, do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. And she knew that the second that I would announce it, that it'd be like a fixed goal for me. So onto my Instagram, put up there, this is the half marathon world record. And then my ultimate goal is going to be the marathon world record. And now that I had that fixed goal, running was at the forefront of my mind constantly. And my partner as well, actually, she did the exact same. As soon as she saw I was going to apply for London, she did the exact same, put in for a charity place. And luckily, both of us managed to find a charity. And I think over the next sort of 6 months from October right there through to sort of March, April time, for both of us, it became again another goal. And there's times when you love it, when you go out and you do a half marathon, maybe like a steady state one, nice low heart rate, and you get back and you feel absolutely perfect and it's brilliant. But then in contrast, there's the times where you go out and just do a quick 8 to 10 miles and you feel awful. And you do have to battle with yourself, especially when it's raining and windy and horrendous. But for me, I think it was setting myself a goal and then being able to train towards it is what sort of brought my love for running back, which I didn't think would exist. And the whole first 3, 4 months of training, I just tell everyone, no, I hate running. Can't stand it. It wasn't until like around Christmas someone said, so you don't run? I was like, well, no, I don't run. And I pulled up my Garmin history, and from 2019 to the end of 2022, I'd clocked only 50 miles of running through my Garmin watch. And at that point, I was running about 40 miles a week. There's a testament to how much having a goal was able to get me on side. I thought after London, that'd be it. That'd be me done running. And now, we're 2 weeks and I'm about to go for my third run again. And it's become an addiction, I think. And I can't help but go out and have to run.
That's lovely. Thank you so much, Sam. And congratulations on meeting those goals and getting those records. I don't think I'll ever speak to anyone in my life that's had to put a fridge on their back to enjoy running. But I want to go back to your time in the Marines and training and what you kind of had to go through. So I've just finished reading a book called Becoming the 0.1% by an ex-Royal Marine, Gareth Timmons. And he talks about like the weights that you had to carry and the distances. Could you outlay that to any of our readers that might not have an idea of what you had to go through in that selection, which probably would turn most people off running for life?
So I've not heard of that book. The title will come from the old slogan for the Royal Marines, which used to be 99.99% need not apply. And that was off the back of only sort of 0.01% of the population is capable of being a Royal Marine. And why? It's literally just that physical output that's required. The sort of the steady state phys isn't the difficult bit. The running, you know, most active males could probably get to the point where you need to run the press ups, the sit ups again. As a separate factor, you can probably get there. But it's the sort of the weighted part that really plays a part. And it's not just your physical ability to do these separate tasks. It's the ability to do them one after another, after another, after another, without getting broken. So not only have you got to build up that physical endurance, you've just got to half hope and half, you know, work on your recovery and your rehab and prehab so that you don't get broken. From the beginning of the training, you know, most of your stuff is unweighted. A lot of running around the camp, a lot of crawling up and down hills, a lot of time in the gym, whether that be pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups, rope climbs, which are, you know, anyone that does CrossFit will know that they're technique-based. It's all relatively simple phys, but you're doing a lot of it. And then sort of as you approach sort of the second phase of training, it gets changed up very quickly and you move down to the bottom field. The bottom field is an assault course, a set of ropes and a big old water tank. And it's sort of probably one of the most notorious zones of a whole lot of training is when you're down on the bottom field. You've got your weapon on, you've got your rifle on. So you're loaded up with about 30 pounds of kit, about just under 15 kilos. And all of a sudden, every single bit of fizz you've ever done feels so minuscule, so much easier. For me, the hardest bit was a 200 meter fireman carry, carrying your oppo in 2 minutes. Again, if it's just me and my mate, I can sling on my shoulders and do it in under a minute, not a problem. As soon as you've both got wet webbing and kit, so before it's wet, it's going to weigh, you know, an extra 30 kilos. I weigh 70 kilos throughout training. If I'm carrying another 70 kilo bloke, and then we've got 30 kilos of kit between us, and then add the fact that you're wet, and all of a sudden that 200 meters feels more like a mile, it's absolutely horrendous. As training progresses, we do speed marches. So again, same amount of kit, and you're sort of running 10-minute miles, but as a pack, which means if you're someone that likes, in marathon terms, jeffing, where you walk and run, it might suit you well, but you have to be at the exact pace and stride as everyone else. For me, being 5'10", I'm not the tallest, I might be stood behind someone that's 6'3". If my pace doesn't match his pace and his stride, you know, you really start to feel that pain in your body. And then finally, away from running, is the carrying kit. Probably at its heaviest, my Bergen's weighed about 45 to 50 kilograms, which is, you know, knocking on the door of 2/3, 3/4 of my weight. And it's the sort of weight where you can't even do anything faster than 1K an hour in a tactical environment where you're having to stop and take cover and navigate in the dark. And that's what I believe is the real man test when it comes to Royal Marine training. The ability to carry such high volumes of kit over horrendous terrain really test your mental strength for sure, as well as your physical strength.
Is it true? One of the final tests in selection, it's like a 30-mile yomp with full kit. So you're pretty much doing ultras before ultras with kit before you're even a runner.
So we've got four command tests at the end of training. First being a 9-mile speed march, so 9 miles, 10-minute mile pace, carrying your 15 kilos roughly of kit. Next day, you roll into the endurance course. So again, same amount of kit, 15 kilos, and you're going through tunnels, through sheep dips, so underwater. And that's 6 miles followed by a shoot at the end. So you have to, you know, take care of your rifle and your kit to ensure you're a standard to fight at the end. Your third test, so you have a day off, and then you swing into the Tarzan assault course. It's about a mile and a half of assault course, some high obs, and then some sort of low obstacles as well, jumping over fences, walls, tunnels again. This one's more explosive. So you've only got 13 minutes, I believe it is, to complete this one. So it's an absolute lung buster. But again, probably my favorite, something I really enjoyed, finishing off climbing a 30-foot wall. And then as you've just mentioned there, that the big one that a lot of people seem to get nervous about is the 30-miler. The 30-miler, you're not carrying your full operational kit. You're just carrying sort of the kit to sustain yourself with. Probably works out around 20 kilos altogether. It's a race across Dartmoor. You've got 8 hours to complete it in, all 30 miles, as well as ticking off a number of tours. Not many people fail, purely because you've gone through all that before, and a little bit of running across Dartmoor ain't going to stop you at that point. As long as you don't slip over or hit a pothole, you'll be okay.
I love how you say, when you're saying just the kits to sustain you, I'm thinking like 5 kilos or something, you know, ultra weight. And it's like, yeah, just the 20 kilos. And the reason I wanted to talk about the Marines a bit is, I think one of the key parts for you in this challenge, what comes across, is the mindset piece. And you hear it a lot, like the Marine mindset and, you know, the ability to go in and, you know, assess a problem, find solutions. How important has that been to you in achieving what you've been able to achieve in the last sort of few years running?
Absolutely. So it builds in training, and then throughout the rest of your career, that the mindset that you're talking of, which is, you know, some people could see it as detrimental sometimes, but like the fear of failure is a big one for us. You know, everything you do represents the Royal Marines, and if you're seen to be weak, then it has an outcome. If I turn up to something and someone's like, oh, he's a Royal Marine, there's a standard expected, which could be negative to some people, but usually for the majority of Royal Marines, it instills that positive mindset where you're eager and determined to perform to that sort of maximum capacity that you can. And then certainly for me, with the challenges with the fridge, that mindset of, you know, you have to display it and put everything you can on that table was certainly there. If I break that down to the first world record, which was Brighton half marathon, I set off on a pace slightly faster than I'd planned, but felt comfortable and stuck to it. And it's sort of a testament to how well my training had gone. Sort of about 9 miles in, way ahead of pace. My plan was 10 and a half minute miles. I'm looking down at the time and I'm sub 10. And just over 3 miles to go, I looked at my partner again. And I'm like, this is too easy at the moment. Are you happy and ready to push? She's like, what do you mean? I was like, we'll push it in for the last 3 miles and pick up the pace. And that mindset for me was, yeah, I could jog it in and I'd break the world record and, you know, everyone would say, well done. But when someone else broke that in, you know, someone's going to break it, definitely. When someone breaks that, I want to look at it and go, I set that record where I can set it. And someone better than me at Fizz has beaten me. Good effort to him. Whereas if I dawdled across the line and was happy that I'd finished, the second someone broke that, I would be upsetting myself. Or I'd question and be like, oh, I probably could have done more. And I'd definitely feel resentment. But that mindset, that commander mindset, just says you need to take everything you've got and put it down. Don't just strive for, yeah, well done. You strive for everything that you've got and sort of put that benchmark out.
With the fear of failure, you'll have, I mean, lots of people will just simply not sign up to something because of that fear. What advice would you give to people in terms of, you know, being able to overcome that and set yourself like these big goals that you talk about to chase?
I think the first thing to think about is, when you set yourself a goal, there's a reason that you want to do it. So think about the reasons why you want to do it. Rather than pick the goal first, think about the reasons you want the goal. So, for example, for me, it was I want to raise money for charity. It wasn't I want to run a marathon at all. I want to raise money for charity. And then, right, I'm good at carrying weight. How can I carry weight and raise money? And that's when the idea of the fridge came. And it was built from the idea of what I want to achieve rather than picking a goal and trying to achieve it. So then when it came to London, it wasn't about breaking the world record. It's how do I train to carry the fridge? And the sort of end result came from, you know, the building blocks almost, if that makes sense. Sorry. But I'd say what's also important is, although I know for me, what drives me is my fear of failure, I also 100% know that nobody that matters actually cares if I fail. If I went around London and I didn't break that world record, I don't think there'd be a single person that messaged me telling me that I'd failed or that I was useless or it wasn't good enough. The only person that would have said that would have been myself. And the only way I could have definitely failed is if I didn't try.
Yeah, it's such an interesting point. I'm relatively new in my ultra running journey, right? So I did my first ultra, Spartan ultra, October time last year. And I failed as many ultras as I finished. But it's because I've set myself, like my second ultra, the Spartan was 50K. My second one was 164 miles, with no background or anything. Just like, I'll go as far as my body can carry me and I'll push myself to my limits. And if I don't finish where they say the finish point is, I've still figured out what my limit is and been able to go to that. It's all about just giving it a go, right?
Yeah.
You've got to try and just put that fear aside. And yeah, they say the only way of failing is by not turning up or not signing up.
Exactly. In what you said there with, 164 miles, although you may have failed to reach the finish line, you didn't fail what you set out to do. You set out to see what your body can achieve. And if you got to the point where you felt like your body, or you knew your body was done and you knew you had to stop then, you won't feel like you failed anywhere near as much as if, in comparison, if you did 60, 70K and you're like, oh, I'm not going to finish, and pulled yourself off, then you'd feel like you failed. And it's a total different feeling to the fact that if you went 80, 90K and then your body had had enough, it's different, I think. And I think you can learn so much from failing.
Yeah.
Much as I'm petrified of failing and I will do my best not to, I still fail. There's many small goals that I've missed along the way and many failures I had in all my training and all my preparation. But I guess I could learn from those failures to ensure that by the end I could succeed.
Yeah, such a good piece of advice. I want to talk about the training then, how you structured it. So you talk to your partner, you decide, right, I'm going to do the Three Peaks or go for these Guinness World Records. How do you then structure training? Do you sit down and plan it out across the period? Do you sort of go day by day? How do you look at it?
So if I go for the sort of the marathon training after the Three Peaks, so did the Three Peaks, and I sort of started trying a marathon plan. So personally, I looked into how to train for a marathon. I've never ran a marathon. I've never run a half marathon, outside of Royal Marines training, which is very, very, very different. So I sort of looked at how people plan. And at this point, I bought my Garmin watch in 2019, as I said. I also bought a set of Pegasus 36 trainers at the exact same time, which I was still wearing. And if you look at my Brighton half marathon in February, I'm still wearing them exact same trainers. How many miles and gym sessions they got in them, I couldn't tell you because I had no knowledge. So a little bit of research online and sort of try to establish, if I was to run a marathon in this time, how would I need to train? And then I try and facilitate the fact that I know it's very different when carrying weight. I said to you earlier about recovery, rehab and prehab. That was at the forefront of my mind, because if you go whack a heavy backpack on and go for a 10-mile walk, I promise you, you'll be sore the next day. If you go for a 10-mile walk without a backpack, you might be a little bit tired, but you'll probably be absolutely fine. So I had to sort of try and work out where that equilibrium sat, where I can train with the weight, but not write my body off at the same time. So I sort of come up with a structure that roughly on a 10-day plan, I'd get out with the weight at least once and sort of get out training on another four occasions. So it's probably a bit less running than the average person that's training for a marathon that's out 4 or 5 days a week. But because I wanted to carry weight, especially for the longer runs, I had to make sure that I had time to recover. I kind of paid a little bit after Brighton. So I ran Exeter, I think it was on the 12th of February, half marathon with a fridge. Took 2 weeks to recover. Didn't really run much in it because my back had been cut up by the backpack attached to the fridge. So I had to let that heal. And then straight into Brighton, where, as I said, I put everything I can on that table and exhausted my body. Gave myself a week and was out cracking fizz again, starting to run, in preparation for London. And then my body collapsed. I didn't physically collapse, but I was out doing a clean fatigue, no weight on me, half marathon, 10 and a half, 11 minute mile pace, which for me at this point in training is a doddle. And I got to a 10 mile point and my body went, nope. And those last 2 to 3 miles, I struggled in. And it kind of reflects back to the failures. I had failed myself at that point, because there's no way I should struggle at that distance as far as I was concerned. But I hadn't looked after my body. I hadn't taken into account in my training program that I'd worked extremely hard for 2 half marathons, 2 weeks apart, carrying, over 25 kilos on my back and the effect it would have on me. And that was the first time that in all that time I had to stop and have some time off and allow my body to recover.
And how did you go about fueling? So again, my understanding in the Marines, you're sleep deprived, you have rations, or you're normally calorie deprived as well during that. How have you structured it while training, say, for the marathon? What sort of fueling strategy did you apply?
when I started this journey back in July, I weighed 78 kilos. Just before London, I was just below 73 kilos. So I've lost over 5 kilos in weight, most of which is muscle loss. I'd imagine my body fat percentage hasn't really changed. But for fuel, it's not too dissimilar to probably what you do for an ultra marathon, where whenever I've got a big training session, anything more than a half, especially if I'm carrying weight, sort of a day or 2 days out, I'm thinking about the carb loading. And on the event, whether it be a training run or, you know, an actual event, I'm ensuring that I'm taking a lot of food and fuel with me. Personally, I get along quite well with gels. My body doesn't seem to get too upset by them. So whilst I'm actually out on an activity, carb gels, and I love a little crepe from Aldi. They're absolutely key in case you need something solid. But I think for anyone that's maybe new to sort of doing anything long distance, anything half or above, have a look into fueling and carb loading the day before, because the difference it makes to do it properly, I think, is absolutely massive. Prior to Extra on the 12th of February, I didn't really carb load. I ate a bit more food as much as I could, but I didn't know anything about carb loading. And then 2 weeks later, when I did it for Brighton, I did a proper carb load. Had a lot of advice from some experts that spent a little bit of time with me. And the time difference was almost 20 minutes. Obviously, there's a bit of fitness difference in there. And one, I was wearing boots, one, I was wearing trainers. So there are key differences. But from finishing Exeter and feeling awful in 2 hours 22 to 2 hours 4 minutes and feeling like a beast, there is a huge difference on that purely through carb loading. Definitely advise people to look into it.
I never knew about in the first marathon. I did Brighton Marathon about 10 years ago with no strategy at all, fueling wise, and I hit the wall hard. I was in a Mr. Motivator bodysuit that probably weighed about 10 kilos or so. So nothing as heavy as you're talking about, but got to about mile 17 or whatever, and the standard wall kind of happened. And I got through the half in about 1 hour 40. I was flying. And then I think I finished just over 4 hours. That second half just destroyed me. I find a difficult distance, probably like half marathon to a marathon, where you're going too fast to have any proper food, but you're too long to go without food. So yeah, it's a really interesting distance, I think, that. And if you get a strategy like you seem to have found, where, yeah, you can feel like a beast and you could do a lot of it beforehand with a carb overload, then transforms the race entirely, doesn't it?
Definitely. Like you said there, spending a bit of time to understand nutrition, understand what your body requires is so, so important. Similar to you during the London Marathon. Again, I've never run a marathon in my life. Didn't have a clue really what I was doing other than the research and speaking to the professionals beforehand, but I didn't have a clue how my body was really going to react. Similar to you, set off really well. I hit the half marathon point, 2 hours and 12 minutes. And I had a friend back home who was watching and tracking me on the app, a lady called Helen. She's done it 3 times before. And I told her my strategy, 11 minute miles, get me in just under 5. So as I'm running 10 minutes and 12, by my watch, it was bang on 10 minutes, which is obviously slightly out with the GPS in London. I'm running along, sending her a message like, I feel good. I think it's okay. Well-fueled, and you know, that 2 hour window, which was preloaded with carbs, I absolutely smashed. And then your body starts to, you know, run out of its glycogen stores just past the 2 hour mark. And I got to just about mile 15, I hit a very, very small and slight incline. And for the first time on that whole run, my legs felt it, this tiny little incline. Immediately I switched my plan. I was like, right, no more running on the hill. I'd run every step of the way so far and felt amazing. This was the first time, and I was like, right, walking the hills now. So I moved into a sort of a walking strategy for the hills and then ran the rest. And again, sort of an hour later, I've done another sort of 5 miles. I've hit mile 21. I was still feeling okay at this point, but I knew it was coming. I just didn't know when it was coming. And then I walked up another hill. And then as I reached the top, it's probably like a 0.2% incline or something silly, non-existent. And I went to run, and I got about 200 meters down the road, and I noticed I was walking again. And I just, at that point, I'm in the hole. You know, I've fueled a hell of a lot. I put, you know, nearly 100 grams of carbs in my body every hour up to this point, 3 hours in. And like you, headbutt that wall pretty damn hard. But due to knowing what I knew and the education that I had provided to me by several different people that have ran before, professionals that have been helping me out throughout, I just knew immediately fuel, electrolytes, salt, and immediately started doing all that preparation to try and save it before it was too late. And it kind of worked, and it allowed me to obviously continue for the rest of the marathon.
Yeah, that ability to adapt and sort of change strategies and take action. That was one of the first things my coach ever said to me is like, if you ever feel that you need to do something, just do it. Don't think about it too much. You know, take that action, it could save your race. And I guess one of the other parts I would talk to you about is, and I guess this is another big thing in the Marines, was teamwork. So having your partner kind of go through it with you, so a lot of the training with you, how much has that helped?
What it provided a lot for me is she knows even less about running than I do. And that, you know, that's saying something, especially before we started. And my weighted pace is very similar to her normal pace. A lot of my training I did with a 20 to 25 kilo bag on my back, which would mean that our training speed would be relatively similar. And the motivation of two people having the same goal and working together, like, makes a huge difference. If I was just training to run it as fast as I could, I don't think it'd be quite as motivational. It'd certainly help, but it would mean that our training plans would be too different to train together quite so often. But being able to observe both of us improving, both of us moving towards the same goal and the same target, and both feeling so good about it and seeing constant improvements just motivates you beyond belief. What worked quite well for me is if I didn't want to carry the weight, I could then schedule in my harder training sessions during the week whilst I'm away at work with the Royal Marines. And then when it comes to the weekend and she wants to do a half marathon or a 10 mile or something, I can go at whatever pace I need to because it's my recovery running, which meant at no point did I ever feel that I was hampered, or no point did I ever felt like she was slowing me down. And in the same way for her, she would do the opposite, where the sessions with me would be push sessions. And whilst I'm away at work during the week, she would slow down and enjoy a slower tempo once to ensure that we kind of married up quite nicely.
Yeah, I find it so good, particularly in the training, just to have that person where you're both going through goals yourselves, right? So it helps get you out of the house, potentially on days where you're struggling, or rainy days, windy days over the winter. I guess one big question for you then, what's next? Is the fridge retired, or have you got another challenge for it?
I'm not sure yet. There's little ideas that are floating about. A few little bits going into my inbox. The fridge isn't retired yet, but I just don't know what is next. I've got big ideas that I can't afford or don't have time to do yet, but I'm logistically trying to work out what could be next. Trying to find something in the way of progression. It needs to be, if I want to raise more money for charity, which is what the goal is I somehow need to step up from London. I could be naive in the way I'm looking at it, but I'm struggling to see what is bigger than breaking that world record at London.
That's great. So I'll let you go in a second, but I wanted to end the podcast by asking you a few quick fire questions, if you're ready.
Yeah.
So first question, trail or road?
Road.
Wind or rain?
Rain.
Hot or cold?
Cold.
Up or downhill?
Up.
Music or nature?
Is that usually nature? I'd say 8 out of 10 times will be nature, but sometimes music is key.
Group or solo?
It depends on the training environment. If I'm trying to train hard, I prefer solo. But if I'm on my easier sessions, so for example, with my partner, I prefer a group.
And then when you finish training or an event, what's the first food that you crave?
A sweet tooth. It's got to be something sweet every time. As soon as I get back, it's anything sweet. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's sweet, I'm eating it.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for taking the time out today. Congratulations again on the records, and we can't wait to hear what you have planned next.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time as well.
And local legends, if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like or follow on whatever platform you listen to. We'll be back next week with another inspiring tale from the pack. Happy trails all.